but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon State Baseball will start their Super Regional tomorrow, Friday. Best of three series against Florida State. Mitch Canham, the coach at Oregon State, talking about his team.
Even just thinking about everyone else out there who watched, you know, the way these guys competed all weekend and have done so all year, I think the entirety of Beaver Nation is proud. Even people that, you know, haven't watched the Beavs play, that tuned into those games, were extremely impressed by their attitude, their togetherness, the fun that they had, you know, their intent to detail and doing the little things throughout the weekend in the face of adversity. So extremely proud.
Yesterday on the show, we had former coach Pat Casey on. It was a fantastic interview. If you missed it, go back and grab the podcast. Today, Hal Cowan, longtime sports information director and a guy who is the founder of the Beaver Baseball Booster Club back in the day. He was there. Hal Cowan joining us now. How are you, man?
I'm great. How can you not be great? Sun's out. It's baseball season and golf season.
I love it. I love it. Hey, so give us an idea. You know, I think it was like, 1976 that you go to Oregon State as the sports information director. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
That's correct.
You were also previously in the same role at Oregon, 7 years there, and then I think you went to the World Football League, right? Am I getting this all right?
Or the World Freebie League, as we used to call it.
I love it. And so give us a sense. 1976, you arrive in Corvallis. What was the vibe around baseball?
Well, Jack Riley, who was a coach then, and he and I were teammates at Linfield College. So I was always close to Jack with a baseball program, but it was struggling. All of our non-revenue sports were really struggling during that period. It was just budgetary reasons, but Jack was very competitive always with his teams, and he was in a hunt for the Northwest. At that time was the four school Northwest Conference, and he was always in a hunt for the title up there.
I know Pat Casey yesterday, you know, I asked him, how did it begin, how did it start, and he says, well, I don't know. But then in the course of talking with him, you sort of grasp how it really started. It's the work ethic. It's the values. You saw Pat Casey get the job, and he didn't have immediate success. But he, you know, like maybe John Wooden at UCLA, grows into it, and suddenly there's a moment of truth where something clicks. Can you maybe help us understand what you saw in that 10 or 11 years in the run-up before they even get to Omaha and before they start winning championships?
Well, Pat, who will always be my number one favorite coach in history, says he may be the best coach that's ever coached college baseball. That's my own opinion. But Pat was a hard worker, had tremendous charisma with players, and he just said, we're going to get the best players out of the state of Washington and the state of Oregon. We're going to win with Northwest players. And he just made a crusade of recruiting the local kids, and it started paying off. Instead of them going to Southern California or other warm places, Arizona, all of a sudden we started getting them coming to our place. And 1 year he hit the bonanza when he got the top four or five kids, out of Oregon, and that started fueling what you see now.
I look at that 2005 team, They go to Omaha. There are 23 kids from the state of Oregon on the roster, whole bunch of others from Washington. You're right. It was Oregon and Washington kids. The belief prior to that is you couldn't win with those kids. How did Pat Casey win and break through? And when did you see that team suddenly start believing, hey, we're, you know, it's not just about getting to Omaha. We can win this thing.
Well, it started a little bit before that. I mean, they were just progressively getting better. You could see better talent out there, and he built a belief that they could win against anybody, and that belief still permeates today. But I just marveled at how hard he worked at it, and he got players believing. I just remember, like, when he recruited Darwin Barney, shortstop from Beaverton.
Yep.
You know, he told Darwin, you're going to be my shortstop from day one, period. Freshman year, you're starting. You know, he gets Jacoby Ellsbury, who probably was a first, second, third round draft pick out of high school, I forget. But he told Jacoby, they offered him $1 million to sign out of high school. He told Jacoby, you come play for me, you'll triple that, which he did, first-round draft pick for the Boston Red Sox. But he got them believing. I mean, he just got the players believing they could do it. And Pat was just relentless. I've never seen a coach more intense than Pat, by the way. He just was unbelievable. I mean, he just believed in winning. There was nothing else.
There's also a burnout factor to that, and I think you probably had a front row seat to how he felt or sounded at the end of every season. There were a lot of years where I would talk to him sort of towards the end of the year, and I thought, gosh, is he going to come back next year? And then I finally figured out that's just kind of the intensity that he had, and you know, you to maintain that, you're drained at the end of the year.
There's no question. Pat was not exactly overweight, as you know. And he'd lose 20 pounds in a baseball season. I mean, he was skin and bones every year at the end. I mean, he just pushed himself in pressure. I mean, it was personal pressure he put on himself because he could not stand to lose. I mean, just absolutely couldn't stand to lose. And one little anecdote on that, we lost a game once down in Eugene to Oregon. He started walking home from the stadium to Corvallis, and the bus picked him up on the way, naturally. But, I mean, he couldn't stand losing, and it wore on him. It really wore on him, and I know when he finally retired, I talked to him, it was just like the big weight came off of him. It was tough. Like, it took a toll on him.
You were not surprised, because I remember at the time, you predicted Mitch Canham would become the next coach. What did you see from Mitch Canham as a player maybe in 2006 and 2007 that told you when the job came open it was going to Mitch Canham?
Well, all I know is, you know, handling the interviews at Omaha in particular, Mitch Canham was the most polished guy in interviews I had ever been around of any athlete, bar none. He was fabulous. And he just, you know, he came to Oregon State as a first baseman, and Pat made him a catcher he'd never caught in his life, and he turns out to be an All-American catcher. I mean, he had the same kind of ingredients that Pat had, not as intense as Pat, but along with that, after we won the last title in 2007, I casually asked Pat back there in Omaha, I said, Pat, do you have a guy you think is the best player you've ever coached? And I thought, in my mind, he's going to say Ellsbury. And he says, well, I don't really want to answer that, but he says, I'll tell you one thing. I says, I can tell you who the smartest player I've ever had, and that's Mitch Canham. He says, oh, really? He says, yeah, from a baseball IQ, he's the smartest player I've ever had. And also, I'll say, he's the best leader I've ever had. I filed that away, and when Pat retired, I called guys at Oregon State, and I said, well, I know who your next baseball coach is going to be. Who's that? I says, Mitch Canham. He said, no, we'll never hire a guy that's in professional baseball. And I says, well, I guarantee you, because Pat Casey's going to work with Barnes on that, and Pat's going to be the deciding factor. Mitch Canham will be the coach. And he was.
Hal Cowan is with us, longtime sports information director at Oregon State. He previously worked in the Pac-12 at Oregon and at Cal. Hal, in 2006, Oregon State had its back against the wall in the College World Series. They faced six straight elimination games. They went 6-0. Jonah Nickerson, right-handed pitcher, local kid from the state of Oregon, was a workhorse during that run. I don't know how many pitches he threw, but they were a team that refused to go home. What do you remember about that breakthrough national championship in 2006 and that team that just refused to lose in the end?
Well, you said the key word. They just refused to lose. They had the Pat Casey influence there. I mean, they just weren't going to lose. I was just amazed. I was there for the whole tournament, obviously. It just flabbergasted me how we kept coming back. I mean, every time they counted us out, we came back. If I remember correctly, we lost the first game of the tournament when we went back there. So we were going through the consolation rounds basically the whole tournament. And then we got to play, North Carolina in the championship game, and North Carolina was way odds-on favorite to win the thing. They had, they had five first-round draft picks on that team. And we played small ball against them and just bunted them to death. They couldn't field a bunt, and we just absolutely just beat them just playing on fundamental small ball, and they couldn't handle it.
Jonah Nickerson, Jonah Nickerson in that postseason was 4-0 with a 1.23 ERA, 36 innings pitched, most outstanding player of the College World Series. It was a guy who was a really good pitcher all season long, 13-4 for the season, but 4-0 with a 1.23 against teams like North Carolina. That was something to see.
Yeah, one thing he had, Jonah had unbelievable control. About as good as anybody ever seen. I mean, you hold the glove up, he'd hit it. He didn't walk people. He wasn't that overpowering. I'd say he was probably 89-90 in that range, but he had pinpoint control. And he pitched effortlessly, which not a big strain on his shoulder and his arm. That's why he was able to do it. But he was just unbelievable.
Yeah, Kevin Gunderson is also coming in out of the bullpen, was very, very good. Dallas Buck, other guys during that run. You feel like you have a piece of ownership. I mentioned the Booster Club. Tell us about maybe the formation of the Booster Club, how that got going.
Well, 1985, when Dee Andros retired as athletic director, we brought in Len Snyder as athletic director. And Len was from West Virginia, Marshall, where he came from. He was back. He was an Eastern guy. But he come in, and obviously we all know that football and basketball is paramount. But we were having financial difficulties in the athletic department at that time. And Lynn started going through the budget for the next year, the 86 budget. And he started chopping off money, recruiting money, and other money, operational money, off of all the non-revenue sports. And baseball was one of them. And like I said, Jack Riley and I were teammates playing baseball at Linfield. And so I had a close relationship with Jack. And Jack comes to me, we talking about it, and I said, well, hey, Jack, I started the Salem Beaver Huddle and the Corvallis Beaver Huddle as booster groups. Not as fundraising things, but just as a booster groups. But I said, I got a bunch of guys that play golf with. Let's organize a dugout club, called it. Made sense, baseball dugout club. And I says, we'll raise some money for you. So I got a board of 10 people I played golf with, and I made sure I had a lawyer and I had a banker in the board because we incorporated it legally. Everything was above board, incorporated as a non-revenue situation for tax purposes, so we could donate, all the money to baseball. So the first thing we did is we ran a golf tournament up at Tokatee and an auction afterwards to raise money, and we got a full field of 150 players, all we could get, and we raised $20,000 the first year. We'd give it to Jack to use for helping in recruiting or whatever else he wanted to do, equipment. And it just kept growing thereafter. We just kept improving and improving it. And toward the, just before I retired, we started selling memberships to the Beaver Dugout Club. And they were $125 a pop for single membership, you know, and that increased revenue and still ran the golf tournament, which they still do, and still run the auction. But the auction creates whole boatload of money now, because all our pro players, like the Ellsberries, all those guys were given back jerseys and stuff that were big items to bid on. We got trips, you know, a lot of people were donating a lot of things, and it was a big money raiser. I don't know what they're raising in this time and age. Shortly after I retired in 2004, the club, the Beaver Dugout Club, was moved into the OSU Foundation, no longer run by the 10 guys I had running it. And so now the OSU Foundation runs it as a separate wing for baseball money, and it makes a lot of money. And that's, and Pat Casey, I'll guarantee you, when Pat came in as head coach, he was big man behind this, getting people to donate money to it.
Can you help me with the typical Oregon State baseball fan, the longtime Oregon State baseball fan? Is this a fan in your mind, Hal, because you've been around this program, you've been to a ton of games, is this a fan who is a Beaver football fan, or is it a different kind of fan, or where do they fall sort of in the crowd of Oregon State boosters and supporters?
Well, I think the ones I know, I mean, the people I associated with, especially in the dugout club, they were football fans, but mainly baseball fans. I mean, their real love was baseball. And Casey, I mean, they loved Pat Casey, and that was the biggest thing. But I don't think, as far as I can remember, I don't remember just a separate baseball-only fan, as opposed to not going to football or basketball. But I think their influence was more on baseball and their leaning. I mean, there's a ton of people that travel with Oregon State baseball wherever they go. I went to, because they played in Texas this year in preseason. My young son lives in Austin, Texas, Round Rock area. I went down for the tournament in Round Rock and the one up in Fort Worth at the Texas Rangers Stadium. 90% of that crowd was Oregon State. And there's four other teams, and two of them are local Texas teams. I mean, they're unbelievable how they travel. They travel 3,000-4,000 every year down to Surprise. I mean, their fan base is unbelievable right now. In my in my connection with Oregon State, I called the ticket manager this week, seeing if I could buy a ticket for the regionals this fall. And he says, "Hal, they're all sold out. Some season tickets, people just read them." He says, "I'll get you two seats in the bleachers." I says, "Thanks, Aaron, but," I says, "at my age, I don't think I want to go out there and sit in the bleachers. So I'll watch it on TV." But I just, it's the following of Beaver baseball is unlike anything I can remember. It's far superior to anything else at Oregon State. You can't get a ticket to Oregon State baseball. It's unbelievable.
Help me with this. We're talking to Hal Cowan, longtime sports information director for more than three decades at Oregon State. Help me with what this would mean, maybe getting to Omaha for a team that played as an independent after what happened in the Pac-12. Mitch Canham came on the show and he said, "Hey, my guys, we started talking to these guys last year about staying together." He walked in on practice one for this season and he thanked his players for sticking together. They didn't jump in the portal. They didn't run for the hills. They said, "Hey, we can win here." And here they are at a super regional, two victories away from Omaha. And then a puncher's chance at a national championship if you get there. What would it mean, Hal, for this group with that framing?
Well, I think it's unbelievable based on the circumstances, independent. And you got to give Mitch Canham and his staff credit for doing all that and holding them together. I know as soon as all this NIL stuff started and baseball season's over. I called Pat. I said, Pat, have we got any worries on baseball? He says, Hal, don't worry. He says, we got everything we need. They're there. Nobody's leaving. So, you know, it's just, it's a culture that's built there. You watch when those guys are in there, all they talk about is not going to Omaha. They talk about winning it at Omaha.
Yeah.
I mean, every one of them. I mean, that's what they're there for. They're there to win at Omaha.
And that Omaha experience, that Omaha experience is really different. And I, you know, you don't really get it until you go there and you understand this baseball festival. Now, the city and the citizens of Omaha really embrace it. And, you know, I went by Warren Buffett's house and knocked on his door. And you have just this culture. Can you help people who haven't been to Omaha understand what that tournament feels like and the magic of Omaha?
Well, you know, I've had been fortunate in my career. I've been able to go to about every major sporting event there is. But in my heart, of course, I'm a baseball guy, but my heart, Omaha and the College World Baseball World Series is the ultimate. It is unbelievable. The city, I mean, is all behind that thing. I mean, you know, it's just unbelievable the way they embrace that tournament. And it's the ultimate competition. And when you mention Warren Buffett, I throw in a line to you. In 2005 or 2006, we were in a restaurant where he frequents, and we walked in, the four of us, the Oregon State guys, with our shirts on. And I asked the maitre d', I says, where does Mr. Buffett sit? He says, any place he wants. and he happened to be in the restaurant that night. And we walked by the table, obviously trying to get close, afraid to speak to him, but he looked up and saw us guys. He says, you fellas from Oregon State? And I says, yes, we are, sir. And he says, well, you know, all of Omaha is pulling for you guys. I says, really? I says, why is that? Because they're all clean-cut young men. And that was Pat Casey, you know. There was no beards or no anything under Pat Casey. You know, it was just, they were your favorite son, you know, out there playing. And I think we, and plus we were an underdog. You know, we went in there, I'm sure that we were the eighth pick each time we went in there in 2005, 6, and 7. But we come out 88, and that when we won it in 2018, it was different. We were more in a favored role. But those 3 years, we were not. We definitely weren't favored, but I have never enjoyed a sporting event and being at something more in my lifetime than going to that. Even the Fiesta Bowl when we beat Notre Dame in football, that part of I just would never trade that experience going to Omaha, and I've been to every trip to date, so just to me it's an unbelievable experience.
Pat Casey, have fun watching the series. Florida State coming to town. The Beavers at home starting Friday night in the Super Regional. Thank you for joining us and sharing so much.
Will do. Always happy to talk Beaver baseball.
All right. There's Hal Cowan, longtime sports information director, first at Oregon, then at Oregon State. 7 years at Oregon, 35 years at Oregon State. I want you to leave it here. Our big splash is coming up.